Okay, I'm Bernard, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. And we're here to celebrate Charlie and the Wee Agnostics group that he founded, and to celebrate each other and our recovery. We're going to briefly talk about our memories of Charlie and our memories of early Wee Agnostics, and if you're anything like me, what it felt like to have a safe haven away from people proselytizing and telling me what I had to believe and what I had to accept in order to stop drinking. I knew that sounded wrong. I knew that that wasn't something that Alcoholics Anonymous should represent. I had gotten sober in a quite iconoclastic group, and they invited me to be a general service representative, and that's where I met Charlie. And when I heard Charlie talk about being 20 years sober at that time, not believing in any kind of God, being an atheist, I was immediately attracted to him and asked him to help me. And he invited me to Wee Agnostics, and I met most of you there. We're going to start with Elizabeth telling her stories about Charlie and Wee Agnostics and all that it meant for her. And take it away, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much, Bernard, for reaching out to me. I appreciate that. And Bernard, how long am I supposed to speak for?
You can speak to, 20 minutes or more. Just go ahead and speak freely and openly about how you feel, what your memories are and how you feel.
Okay, thank you. My name is Elizabeth B. I'll just say Barr, Barr, great name for a drunk. That's my married name. My husband has since passed, but I was always grateful for him to give me that great last name. And I'm sharing my last name because that way folks can find me. And I live in San Francisco, California. This November, I'm kind of shocked about it myself, but this November I will have 40 years of continuous sobriety. I got sober November 7th, 1983. And I think I met Charlie when I was about 6 months sober. I was living in the LA area at the time, and I was really, really struggling on so many levels. And one of the things that I was struggling with was the spirituality in Alcoholics Anonymous, because at that time I was definitely an agnostic, possibly an atheist. I was probably—I don't think I ever was an atheist because I didn't have enough certainty to say definitively, "No, there is no God." I was like, "No, I'm an agnostic because I don't know what there is or isn't, but I certainly didn't feel the presence of a higher power in my life at that time. And I had heard about one of my buddies had told me about Wee Agnostics, and that particular meeting was happening at a hospital on Sunset Boulevard. And I went to the meeting and met Charlie, and he was the grand poobah of it. He had started the meeting and just emanated tremendous warmth. He was a caring, loving human being. And I reflected, he had started the meeting, and I reflected on, what is it that people who quote unquote believe in a higher power, what are they supposed to be emanating or demonstrating in their lives? And to me, it's all about love. A higher power is all about love, and to be following a higher power is to be loving and kind. And Charlie Polachek was certainly loving and kind. Everything about him was, to me, everything I experienced about him was loving and kind. And I would talk to him about my struggles with a higher power. And I distinctly remember him picking up his keys. And this is not keys, but this is a pen, an ink pen. And he would say, how do you work the 12 steps without a higher power, without God? How do you do that? And he said, well, I didn't say that I don't have a higher power. I do have a higher power. I just don't call it God. And so he lifted his car keys and he dropped them on the floor. And he said, that's my higher power. And I said, what do you mean? Is gravity your higher power? And he said, no. What that means to me is that the life force that is in the universe, that which guides the universe in with all of its laws, with all of its scientific parameters, whatever that life force is that causes my keys to fall on the ground, that demonstrates that is my higher power. And I said, are you, this was, 1983. And by that time it was probably 1984. And I said, so, the Star Wars movies were very popular. And I said, do you mean like kind of the force that is in like the Star Wars movies? And he said, we talked a little bit about Star Wars, and he said, yeah, if that helps you to understand what I'm trying to convey with my higher power, then yeah, you could use that if you want the force. And I just loved that. And I got to a place of peace so that I wasn't struggling so much about, oh, I have to identify a higher power. Oh, I have to have God as I understand God. I have to come up with something in order for me to achieve sobriety. And so since that time, that was, like I said, nearly 40 years ago, I have gone through lots of different manifestations of my own higher power, all kinds of different things that I have used. And I still do not have a traditional higher power. I do believe in God as I understand God, but it's so loosely defined, it's probably still very akin to the force. May the force be with you. And I want to share a particular moving story and a story about Charlie that I am so very, very grateful for. I have bipolar disorder, which is to say that even though I've got 40 years of sobriety, I am a manic depressive, and my doctor says I have bipolar disorder with psychotic features. Oh, lucky me. And I still have like some hallucinations, although those are much more, I don't believe my hallucinations anymore. So I'm no longer delusional, but like I happen to be sitting in my dining room right now, and Bozo the Clown could come in through one of the doors with a machete. And there was a time in my life when I would go, oh God, look, there's Bozo the Clown with a machete. And I would believe my own hallucinations. So fortunately, I don't believe that anymore, but I still have bipolar disorder. So when I was, I was about 2.5 years sober, and I was living in West Hollywood at the time. And I was going through a psychotic break. I was clean and sober. I was not on any medications. And I thought that there was poison in my food, and I could not eat any food because somebody was trying to poison me. Who? I don't know. Oh, I remember now. I thought that the health department was after me because I was responsible for the AIDS epidemic, and that there were these little cockroaches that had crawled inside my ears and were now running around inside my blood, my blood vessels, and that these cockroaches were the AIDS virus, and that they were in my house and they were swarming around West Hollywood, and that the health department was after me, and that if they found me, they were going to arrest me. Okay, again, I'm 2.5 years sober at the time. I did not have AIDS or the HIV virus. I did not have cockroaches. So where I came up with this, I don't know. So in the middle of the night, I was not sleeping. I was not eating. And I called Charlie Polachek in the middle of the night. And I was telling him that I was having internal bleeding. And could he please come over to my house and check me out? Okay. Sorry. It's very funny if it weren't so tragic. So I think I was about, what was, I was about 26 years old at the time. No, I was 27 years old at the time. So Charlie comes over to my house, and my house is like filthy. There's just, I had trashed it. There's junk everywhere. No cockroaches, but junk everywhere. And I'm like, oh, I'm bleeding. And there's no blood anywhere. And he's calm as a cucumber. And he just sort of, he ends up talking. Sorry. He ends up talking with my family. I would trusted him enough to speak to my family. They all lived out of town, and they were concerned because they could tell I was, not right. And they made a suggestion as to which hospital to take me to, etc. And I kept saying, but Charlie, I'm just not working the third step right. If I could just work this third step right, I'd be fine. And he goes, you know what? That's fine, Elizabeth. But in the meantime, let's have you go to the hospital. So he drove me to a psychiatric hospital where I got some treatment, and he was instrumental to my ongoing recovery after that. And he was just a huge, huge, huge part of my life. And how many people in recovery are willing to take a call in the middle of the night like that? How many people are willing to take somebody who's in a psychotic break to a psychiatric hospital? How many people, can stay calm enough to help somebody in a psychotic break get to the hospital? He was a very, 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 very special human being. I miss him to this day. And I do want to let you know that, as I said, I went to that hospital and I said, oh no, I'm fine. And I just need to work the steps better. And I left the hospital against medical advice. And another year and a half went by. And then I was looking down the barrel of a shotgun, and I was going to take my life. And I was sober, though, but I was going to kill myself. And then I said, maybe something else is going on here. Maybe I do need some outside help. So then I sought treatment from a psychiatrist, and I to this day, I take psychiatric medications, but None of the psychiatric meds that I'm on are sold at any street corner anywhere in the world. Nobody would break down my door, find my medicine cabinet, grab the stuff, and get loaded. It's really boring stuff. All it does is it keeps me from killing myself and or killing you. And also, it keeps me from hallucinating most of the time. Actually, I'm doing pretty good in the hallucination stuff. I'm still a barrel of fun at times, though. but I'm sober, and my life is lots better than it's ever been. And I doubt if I would ever have been able to achieve or maintain my sobriety without Charlie Polachek. And he was an extraordinary human being. I loved him. He comes to mind frequently. I'm still in touch with people who remember him. He was instrumental in my recovery. And I'm so glad that as a result of Charlie, that he was sort of like a stone that you throw into a pond and then the ripples go out. And so as a result of a lot of hard work that Charlie did, the ripples went out, and that we're all here, that many of you are here because of the Free Thinkers movement. And thank goodness for Free Thinkers in AA, because Free Thinkers has infiltrated other 12-step programs, that you don't have to believe in a deity, despite evidence to the contrary, by going to other meetings, etc. It's clear as a bell in the literature that you don't have to believe in a deity. A power greater than yourself is all that you need. G-O-D, group of drunks, G-O-D, good orderly direction, or as how I interpreted Charlie throwing his keys on the ground, the force from Star Wars. Anyway, I don't know if I have much more to add to this. I do want to thank again Bernard for asking me to share today. And Bernard, I believe you live in Northern California, as do I, and we'll have to look each other up some point. I want to thank you all for being here. And my there's a prayer. Don't cringe with that word, please. But there's a prayer that I always like to say, which is, I am not what I ought to be. I am not what I want to be. But by the grace of Alcoholics Anonymous, I am not what I once was. And that is for sure. I am not what I once was. I don't hallucinate like I used to. When I was 6 months sober or so, I got into a chain and knife fight during the break of an AA meeting. And I don't do that kind of stuff now. I've come a long, long way. My wish for all of you is that your sobriety date never changes. So may you always have the sobriety date that you have now. Thank you so much. And with that, I'm going to pass it back over to Bernard. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. We can unmute and thank her if you'd all like to clap or whatever. That's what we do in Southern California. May not do that in Ireland and may seem weird.
Woohoo! Thank you.
Yay, Elizabeth.
Yay. Awesome.
There's a particular order because I'm not a particularly organized person. And I would like to thank Maria for reaching out to many of you who I didn't have your contact information and that you're here. The next person I'd like to pick, if Linda has the time, then I'd like to pick Bob, because I remember Bob when I got to the room, and I know that he'll have something meaningful to say about Merle and Charlie and the early agnostic. And so if Bob G could be our next panelist.
I am just stepping into a dentist. I'll be available in 45 minutes, but I'm going to listen till then.
Okay, great. Thank you. Then I also remember Linda and Cheryl when I was new. So if between the two of you, you want to pick who goes first, if you could please.
I'll go.
Okay.
Hi,
thank you. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Let me see, I'm retired now, so I'm flexible. Go for great. It.
Hi, I'm Linda Carr O'Connor. I live in Santa Monica, California, and I have been here for most of my sobriety. I've also been to Ireland 4 times, so I hope to come visit you all wherever you may be at some point if I'm able to get away. I feel, Elizabeth, like I haven't seen you since my wedding. you're in the pictures. It's so good to see everybody here from the meeting. Kind of relieved I don't have to see the inside of Bob's mouth though during the dental appointment. So yeah, and that is, I always wish that everybody's sobriety date doesn't change. And I pretty much assume that everybody I've ever seen in AA has just continued. I know that isn't necessarily the case, but it is definitely my hope. And I just, that's how I envision everybody just going on. So I got sober June 14th, 1984. And so in another week or so, I believe I'll have 39 years. When I came to the We Agnostics meeting, I had a year. So I had been going to other meetings, and you know, I guess I've been primarily going to We Agnostics for so long, or some version of it, that I don't have a really, really clear idea of exactly how God-fearing the rest of the meetings have gotten. But at that time, in Los Angeles, well, I was working night shift. I was working at an all-night deli called Cantor's, which if you ever come to LA, you have to go. It's a really interesting place, but it is a horrible place to wake up sober. And it's like, so the when I could get to meetings was like when I could get to meetings, because I'd get off at, you know, usually 4 or 6 in the morning. And then, I was recruited to AA by a psychic. I had no idea what was wrong with me. And so when I went to the psychic and he told me I should go to AA the next morning. And I'm like, well, I work. He's like, no, he says you should go tonight. You should go tonight. And I like, well, I have to work tonight. Well, what time do you start? Well, I don't know if it was 8 or 6 or 8 or 10. And he said, oh, that's perfect. Where do you work? I know there's a meeting like right at this corner. I went to the MCC church. I walked in. It was all gay men. They could not have been more welcoming. And then he said to go to the next morning too. And it's like, wait, go tonight and go to the next morning? And he said, yeah. And he told me where to go the next morning at 7:30 in the morning. So I did that and got put on the road to happy destiny. But I wasn't like struggling in the regular meetings. They were very, they seemed pretty wild and freeform to me. But a couple of people told me I might really like this We Agnostics meeting. And I'm like, I didn't have the nerve to go. I just really didn't think I was cool enough to go. But after I had a year, I went, and apparently that's when they also lifted, you know, they used to have smoking, and now it was no smoking, which was kind of great. So I went to the meeting after I had a year. And I'm telling you, it was like better than college. The level of discourse was so wonderful. And it was kind of, it's just like, well, the way we shared was somebody would share, and it was like a pretty substantial group that was all in one room. It wasn't like an auditorium. We were all kind of, the chairs at that time were facing, there was a perimeter, and then people would face each other. So it felt very intimate, but there must have been at least 50 or 60 people in that room. And there were no time limits. I mean, at the time. So it was always somebody from the meeting who would be the speaker. Somebody we already knew that would go on at length. And then we would share. So it was from 8:30 till 10 o'clock at night. It was on a Friday night. And I know there is still some version of it. I have not been for a while, but I'm really talking about like the times that I went back in the 80s, 90s, and into the early 2000s. I know we're here to talk about Charlie. I just saw Charlie the other night. I was watching a video that my husband, who I met in the We Agnostics meeting, filmed on two occasions. One was in July of 2000, when he was about to move to Austin, and we had a big potluck, as was our way. We would typically have, there would be parties at Charlie's house in his yard, and there would also always be a solstice gathering in the winter. So we would all bring really good food. I will never forget Ernie Sanchez's empanadas. And he told me where he got them. And of course, I didn't write it down. And it's been a long time and he's died. But they were really good. Charity Carlson would bring gifts for everybody in the room. As she had, my impression is very little money, but I'm telling you, she would have a special gift for everyone. I'm just crying thinking about it. I mean, it was really, really special. So at this gathering is Bon Voyage, Charlie. It was really nice. I have it on VHS tape. I know among the many, many artifacts I have that need to be digitized. But I have, you know, a pretty substantial collection here. My husband was very keen on documenting things, and AA specifically. I have, you know, a ton of speaker tapes on cassette, but I also have this Bon Voyage Charlie tape. And on it, he just is speaking about, among other things, his higher power. So he explains that entropy was his first higher power. But he came to believe that was a bit negative. So then he moved on to gravity. So I think the key drop must have been a holdover from that until he moved on to the total energy of the universe. So Joseph has him just speaking while we go around. He's going around the room and showing all the people who were in the room. I wasn't there. Bernard was there. Not everybody in the universe was there. The energy in the universe was there, but not everybody was there. And then there's the next section on the tape where you flash forward to March of 2021, and he's still in Los Angeles. So this time he really is moving, though. He really is moving. The assisted living fell through. His wife, Jean, was disabled, and apparently the facility was not actually equipped to provide the level of care that she needed. And so they had to come up with another plan, which they did. He had three sons living in Austin, and they got an apartment, and I think everything worked out. I also have somewhere in this house a tape of his memorial, which was lovely. And Joseph also recorded that. It was a very freewheeling meeting. I had the food commitment for some time. I really, really looked forward to it. I had, I felt a large budget. I was criticized by one person one time, like maybe that was, we were spending a little bit too much, but it's like, hey, you know, the hospital was giving us the room for free as their public service. And we were alcoholics on a Friday night. I mean, what the hell? If we can't, so I got like really good food, like food that I really couldn't afford to be buying for myself, like really high quality natural food store snacks and some substantial food. And it was like very nice. I met my husband there. Very sadly, he died 3.5 years ago. So he won't be popping into the frame anytime soon. That was a lot of great people were there. We had our share of movie stars here and there, but very, very little of any talk of God. It just wasn't an issue. I mean, and like a lot of times now when people come to a We Agnostics meeting for the first time, or if they're asked to lead or share at one, they feel like that's the issue. Like, well, I got to talk about that, or I don't know what to say, or I do believe it. You know, it's like, and it was just like, it gets kind of tedious. That isn't like always the case, but that was just like, it just wasn't an issue. So, you know, but there was always help, you know, for the person who was feeling indoctrinated. You know, certainly there are people in the program who I never was personally pressured to have, religious or quasi-religious beliefs of any kind in AA, but I understand it's fairly common. I also go to like one meeting a week. So I'm not, it's worked for like almost 39 years. So, hey, I must be doing something right. But, it just was not an issue. There was a great tradition also of public service within AA. We were fully part of AA. We still are. I think that's important. I have minutes from old general service meetings from the 80s, and we are mainstream AA. We just we work the steps. You can read the book or not read the book. And this was just a lot of long-term sobriety. But I was and still am extremely grateful for the We Agnostics meeting, for the format. I am one of those people that just like shares about what's going on with me. And I haven't had it like particularly easy. I had a daughter with disabilities 30 years ago, almost 31. And you know, the safety net in this country sucks. It just really does. And there are advances we've made in the law that, you know, that in practice end up mostly just being words if there isn't the funding and the infrastructure to support the laws and the rights that we supposedly have. So it's been, you know, a great loss of personal freedom for me. And, you know, having lost my partner in, you know, supporting this this child, it has been hard. I mean, I can't say like, you know, I can't exactly say my life is better than it's ever been. But on the other hand, I'm a better person than I've ever been. I didn't want to be this good. It's like, it was not my goal. Maybe I'm not, maybe I'm delusional, but, you know, I'm somebody I can live with. It's a good thing. I have to live with myself, but, I was lying sack of shit when I came into the program, you know, and I knew that, and I didn't trust myself anymore. And, I didn't know what the problem was. And I found out. Found out what the problem was. I'm extremely lucky that I haven't had the desire to drink or use since I miraculously got sober when I wasn't even intending to. I'd given all my money to the psychic. He told me what to do. I did it. I didn't have any better ideas. I mean, so many times what I do comes down to, I don't have any better ideas. So I take the next indicated step. I just want to close by sharing a relic with you, which I've told Bernard I'm going to be sending to him, that Joseph preserved. And I see it's gotten a few cracks. I'm afraid I have a very a cleaning lady who just like has to clean everything. And I'm afraid maybe she's been cleaning the relics. So it needs a proper reliquary. But this is a cup, one of Charlie Polachek's cups. So he would sit there in the meeting and draw on the cup throughout the meeting. And you can see this in the video where he's just starting a cup. It has the original, probably has some DNA if anyone wants to clone him. But yes, this is there. If there's two cups. Oh, there were two. Okay, so there are two. And this one is signed CP. Do you think we could auction? I could like make a lot of money off of this. Finally make some money off of AA. Now it's my time. What do I hear from this Charlie Polachek original cup? No, I would never do that. Anyway, it's really wonderful being here. Thank you, Bernard, for asking me to do this. I'm so glad that I am able to. And you may see me step away from the thrill card catalog. It's not a... fake. I'll be tempted to start digging through here looking for pictures from the parties at Jean and Charlie's house. But I should be able to hang out for the rest of the meeting, and I'm glad to be here, and thank you very much.
All right. Let's all thank Linda for her.
Thank you, Linda.
And We're going to hear a few words from a friend of mine that I met at the Unitarian church building, who has always meant a lot to me. But before Elizabeth has to go back to work, she wanted to say a few words about Merle, and then I'll introduce Sean. And because we're celebrating all of the founders of We Agnostics, and Merle was a big part of that, as was Jerry Buchanan and Ernie Sanchez. And these men, they thought for themselves, and they practiced the principles. As far as I understood them, they were meaningful to me, as I'm sure they were to all of the participants that were asked. So, Elizabeth, the floor is now yours.
Thanks. I have to go back to work here, and I didn't realize the structure of what was happening here, because I do want to honor, as you said, Ernie Sanchez and Merle and Jerry Buchanan. They're all gone now, and Joseph's gone, and Charity, and so many of them are gone. And it's just great to see Linda, you're hysterical as you always were. It's good to see you. And I remember your wedding. But anyway, I just wanted to thank you all and give you all a big shout out, a big hug. And it's great that we can be together in a virtual world. And all of those people that I just mentioned, I wouldn't be here without them. And I wouldn't be here without all of you as well, because it's we're all links in a chain, and I need other people in order to survive. I can't do this on my own, and I don't want to hog the floor, but I did want to mention that. Thank you so much. Have a great rest of the time, and maybe there'll be some other event like this or a WEAGS on Zoom that I'd love to hear about. Thanks a lot. Have a good one. Bye, everyone.
Bye, Elizabeth.
So as I mentioned, there was a Sunday night, I think it was, if my memory serves me correctly, in this really beautiful building in West LA. And it was normally a Unitarian church building. And a man that meant a lot to me and was there when I got there was Sean. And and Charlie would also attend that meeting, and I'm sure he has a lot of memories about that meeting and Charlie. So if you'd all welcome Sean.
Thank you, Bernard. My name is Sean Meehan. I am an alcoholic. I too got sober in 1984, the year Ronald Reagan was elected to his second term in office. That's kind of a shocking idea. Anyway, so I got sober because I had to. There was no legal consequences if I did not, but I was dying due to heart issues and things that were precipitated by my alcoholism. So I quit drinking. And I knew that the only path for me to survive as a human being was to embrace this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. And the path within Alcoholics Anonymous was 100% abstinence from alcohol. And so I made the commitment that I wanted to live. And I started attending AA meetings in Southern California. And I was not one of those people that came into AA and immediately felt this, I'm happy, joyous, and free. My feelings then were, I wanted a fucking drink, and I was angry. And but I started to go to AA meetings. And one of the people that approached me and asked to be, if I wanted him to be my sponsor, was to address the anger issue, that it really was essential that I accept this concept of a higher power that really reeked of Catholicism. And I played along with him for a couple months and then said, I can't do this. I am sober. I am committed to being sober, but I'm not going to join a cult. And I felt that AA at that particular time, at least the meetings that I was going to, was very fundamental in its theological bent. So I quit going to meetings. And after about 6 months, I had this overwhelming need to find people with a similar experience that understood what it was like to feel the anxiety of living life without the tool of alcohol. And I started to meeting shop. And through about 3 months of meeting shopping in Southern California, I noticed in the directory that there was this meeting on Friday night and Sunday night called We Agnostics. So I thought, well, what the hell? It's going to be one of two things. It's going to be a big book thumper bunch of bullshit, or potentially it was going to be something a little bit more interesting. Well, I went to the Sunday night We Agnostics meeting, and I expressed my displeasure with mainstream AA, that I felt like I was being ostracized because I didn't embrace some sort of theological concept that they seemed to be embracing, and that it was critically important that I found some comfort in this new path of sobriety. And at the end of that meeting, this older gentleman with a very thick New York accent came up to me and he said, "Are you really an alcoholic?" And I said, "Yeah, I am certainly a member of the tribe." And he handed me a little piece of paper. And it was like one of those little pieces of paper one gets inside of a fortune cookie. And on it was the name Charlie with 7 digits. Back then, I believe Charlie thought everybody in Southern California still lived in area code 213. And he said to me, "If you want to discuss the higher power aspects of Alcoholics Anonymous or anything else in relationship to being sober, please feel free to give me a call." Well, I did. And after a month of conversations with Charlie, I asked him to be my sponsor. It was probably one of the wisest decisions that I ever fell into in my life. Charlie was not what many would consider to be an easy sponsor, at least with me. He was very strict. He insisted upon a particular discipline, and it was absolutely what I needed. And it was a pathway into AA where I was able to dismiss all of what I felt was a bunch of magical thinking nonsense. And Charlie, as we all have stories about watching him make contributions of selflessness, the one thing that always impressed me about Charlie in the early years, Charlie would do these things of unconditional kindness, without looking for any kind of audience. Actually, I felt that he was always trying to avoid audiences that would label him as some sort of kind individual. He truly was a holy man from my perspective. And there were three things that Charlie insisted upon for me, and he insisted upon himself and for many people that he encountered. And that was living with rigorous honesty, consistent responsibility, and live a life of unconditional love. End of story. And it has burned itself into my consciousness that that is truly a path of righteous living and of responsible living. And it is my sincere hope that wisdom that he imparted to me can be shared with others, and that the spirit of Charlie and that spirit of giving without any theological participles can continue to live on. And outside of that, there's really not a lot more that I can contribute to the magnificence of this human being. I did write an obituary for Charlie, which appeared in We Agnostica. And I believe that's still available online, where I expressed my deep affection for him and told some stories about his giving unconditionally. I was truly touched when Maria approached me about this meeting, and I was thrilled that she brought it to my attention, and that there's many people in here who it's been my blessing, if you will, to have crossed paths with. You have all contributed to my life in a very positive way, and I will always be deeply grateful to you and certainly to Charlie. And without that, I'm still a Cub fan, and I give the floor to somebody else. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Thank you, Sean.
Thanks so much, Sean.
Since there's no particular order, because I don't like to be so organized that it's doctrine and rigid, I wanted it to be the atmosphere of celebration. I'm going to pick Cheryl now at this time, and until Bob, if he's able to talk after the dentist, is able to talk, and then we'll go from there.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Wells, formerly Cheryl Babcock. I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 1st, 1988. And what happened to me was I had gone to an AA meeting in 1981. I read in the Whole Earth catalog, which I don't know if that still exists anymore, and it had a very bizarre little story by a woman who was affected by alcoholism and had become a raving nutcase and a bunch of other, and I recognized it. And it said she went to this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous, which I had really heard of, but I went. Fortunately, that was in Santa Cruz, and somebody belched really loudly and longly during the Lord's Prayer, which carried me for the next 7 years of not getting sober. Because I always, you know, wherever I was, there was just God, 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 God. And I didn't, I'm like, and they'd say, well, if you don't have baby Jesus or don't have God, then you can't stay sober. So I hit the liquor store on the way home. You know, I was told this constantly. And it also, a lot of stuff people said made no sense to me. They said, well, my best day drinking was just sucked compared to my worst day sober. And I'm like, what? You know, my best day drinking, I was dancing on a tabletop to Sam and Dave playing live. It was pretty fucking good. So I since found out they were lying, but you know, it took me a long time to realize that. And so I went through, you know, just hideous years of being drunk and sick and trying to stop. And despite what I thought of as my hefty brain, being unable to do it. I come from a very long line of alcoholics. My Irish ancestor came over in 1757. So we've been away for quite some time, but it's all through my family. And I also, you know, I thought I was different then because I went to college, you know, and then I went to law school. I mean, I was hot stuff, but it didn't, of course, you know, it doesn't matter. And then I went to this meeting that was, it turned out, it was literally the closest meeting to the place I lived in Los Angeles. And that was the Tuesday night at We Agnostic Step and Tradition Study. And I went in there and the Pope was in town and people were nuts. There was one lady who started talking about basically, you know, fucking the Pope in the ass, what a piece of shit he was. And another person called him the whore of Babylon. And it went on. I mean, people were really angry, but they were sober. And this was unlike anything I'd ever experienced in an AA meeting before. And I'm like, these people are fucking crazy, but they're not drinking and they don't believe in God. And I don't know how they're doing that, because I've always been told different, but I want to know more about this. So I went out one more time and I came back in. I remember they said, if you check out of this hospital before the 4 weeks are over, you're going to get drunk. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm going to go try this thing and I'll see. And I've never, you know, so far I haven't drank again. I mean, that's what I needed to know, was that people who did not believe in God could stay sober, and to see them, and to see that people could be really angry and saying some really truthful but unpleasant things. I mean, it just kind of like blasted my mind open, you know. And I spent the first year looking around, and I'm like, well, you know, there was one guy who read the big book and burned it. That may have been Ernie Sanchez. And there was somebody else who rewrote the whole thing. And, you know, so other people said the steps were stupid, they were never going to do them. And it amazed me. So, and they were all sober, a lot of them for a really long time. And I watched these people, and I ended up deciding, you know, I was going to do the steps. It seemed like the people who had done them were, you know, maybe a little calmer, a little more able to like hold jobs, you know, stuff that I wanted to be able to do eventually. So I went through all of that. And when I decided, like, I forget what year it was, I'd been to my grandmother's funeral and I missed church and I wanted to go back. Ernie Sanchez was my sponsor into the Catholic Church, which now, you know, I think that's pretty hysterical. It's probably enough to get us both excommunicated, but you know, I am a member. So there, I spend my spare time now. I've grown produce, give it to Catholic Worker. So I'm still trying to fuck the man every way I can. I found out recently, some brain damage from when I was drinking. I do have some frontal lobe, I don't know what they call it, white matter hyperintensities. And my neuropsychologist told me that was alcohol related. So, I mean, I found this group just in the nick of time. I didn't have a whole lot left before it would all be gone. And I know I was coming in here today, and I've had two very strange experiences related to Charlie Palahniuk today. I was listening to a podcast when I was out harvesting stuff this morning, and Mercedes Tonder came on, who was a member of We Agnostics in Hollywood when I came in. And she started talking about Charlie and how helpful he was to her, because, you know, she'd been to all these other meetings and she had been raised Catholic and was just really angry at the whole damn thing. And Charlie, when someone would say, well, bless you, and, you know, may God keep you until the next meeting, and she'd want to like deck him. She was starting to learn to deal with it. She said, Charlie Palahniuk came up to her and said, here, well, you have to learn to translate. When they're saying, may blessings fall upon you, what they're saying is, they hope you have a really nice day and keep working on that. So, you know, and that's true. And I know that's the kind of thing you imparted to me, that I've got, you know, I can go to normal meetings now. Occasionally I'll, you know, especially if I'm speaking, somebody might land on me for, and it's like, but now that I've been sober for 35 years, it's a lot easier. I do remember going into a women's meeting once, and they said you had to say you were an alcoholic. So I said, I have a desire to stop drinking. They tried to throw me out. And so I've been afraid of women's meetings ever since then. But I still go once in a while. But so I like that. Another person we had that was very helpful to me was, his nickname was Spiritual Al. And he got that nickname in a church in South Central Los Angeles, which is heavily African-American, because the first 2 years, he just stood up and lied. He told about how God was working in his life and keeping him all the drugs and the cocaine and all this. And then finally, it's just like hit him. And he got up once and started telling the truth, that he didn't understand anything about God, you know, and it was all just, he didn't get it. And it drove him nuts. And so this South Central LA started calling him Spiritual Al. So remember, we used to have a guy who would get, you know, sometimes would get in fights at meetings, and they started calling him Serenity Bob. So, you know, these little nicknames can follow you around quite a bit. Another thing that happened to me today related to Charlie was, I think I was on, you know, looking at Instagram or something at Reels, and they had this reel of The Honeymooners, that old show with Jackie Gleason and Art Carney. And Ed Norton was putting on this really bizarre looking space helmet type thing. And he was ready to watch Captain Video, and then he had to get his ray gun, and it was cracking me up. And then I remembered, you know, Charlie worked on that show in like 1949. And I read somewhere that he was the person who constructed the first Captain Video ray gun. And I'm like, this is really weird today that this stuff is showing up like in the first 6 hours I'm awake. And I thought I'd seen all the Honeymooners episodes, but I didn't remember that one until I just saw that thing. And I'm like, I think Charlie is floating around there in the ether somehow. You know, he's still bestowing little nuggets of stuff when I need it. I do remember he was always, you know, if there was something going on, he was always there. You could call him. I found out about 12, 13 years ago that I have Asperger's, a form of autism. And I did not, you know that, but it certainly explains a lot of my anxiety. So when I first got sober, I mean, I could just barely stand to exist. And I had become a lawyer, which was, so I was supposed to go to court and like talk in public in front of hostile crowds. And I called up Charlie and I'm like, I can't do it. You know, and he just like talked to me for a long, long time and got me calmed down. And it was just like, you know, and this where they can this suit up, show up and tell the truth. Of course, that tell the truth thing when you're a lawyer is, you know, they a lot of times your boss didn't like you to do that. But I remember one time arguing the other person's side because they didn't show up after a big earthquake. So, well, they won. But, you know, these little it really just made a difference. He was always there at every birthday party. I mean, he was just there. And he was always available and he was always friendly. And, you know, you could play chess with him. I remember we started a new meeting once at a gay place and, you know, he was there. He showed up. He was just incredibly supportive. I mean, I don't know how he had time to work. And I know he did work until he was quite elderly. But he took care of people. You know, that was his thing. He loved Alcoholics Anonymous and he loved helping people stay sober. And that's why we loved him. So I think that's about all I have to say. I'm going to wait around the rest of the day and see if I get any more Charlie shots. I understand those better than God shots anyway. But that.
Thank you, Cheryl. Cheryl, thank you so much. It's so good to see you.
So Bob is still with the dentist. Hopefully Maria can stay with us now. Her memories of We Agnostics and Charlie and Merle and anything she wants to share. She was really beneficial in putting this together. She did a lot. So let's thank her right away for all she's done. And Maria, can you speak?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Maria. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Maria.
Thank you very much. I'm really, really enjoying everybody share. Excuse me for not being on camera, but it really hurt my eyes very, very badly this week. So the less distractions I have, the better. I'm not thinking all that clearly. There's a lot actually that I don't remember. What I do remember is a few things. And of course, I had been using since I was about 10 years old, had a very chaotic upbringing and was pretty much feral in a lot of ways. I didn't have a lot of guidance. And then I had an injury and I didn't have health insurance and my family didn't assist me. So, but one thing that the doctors did say was that, you know, that drugs and alcohol would, you know, kills neurons. And I knew I didn't have a safety net. So I knew that I had to be as clear-headed as possible. So it took me several years, but I did, you know, cut down. I cut, you know, first I stopped the cocaine, then I stopped the weed. Then the last thing was the alcohol. And then, I moved someplace. I moved to Glendale, and where I was living, there was someone that was also didn't drink, but he was a member of AA, and I didn't want to have anything to do with AA. I had, as a social worker, I had been to a couple of meetings, but I didn't care for the God thing, and I certainly didn't care for the what I found to be very patriarchal. And so, but this friend of mine, I love to dance, and he said that they had dances sometimes after the meetings. So he invited me to a dance, and I was really looking forward to that. And I got all dressed up, and I got there, and it was this room full of people. They said, you know, oh, the dance wasn't going to start for a couple of hours. So I think he must have tricked me to come in a couple of hours early. And I was very uncomfortable in rooms full of people without being, you know, without having my medication, you know, whether it was alcohol or whatever other substance. So felt very threatened. But so I was very self-conscious. And there I was all dressed up, and everybody was staring at me in the meeting. And I'm only telling this story because it was right from the get-go. It was, you know, who are you? What are you? And as soon as the meeting ended, you know, everybody was on me, right? What I used to say, like white on rice, they just all came up to me, and they were very friendly and very kind, but they were, you know, big book God, he, all this stuff. And I was just overwhelmed. But luckily, I still kept going to the dances, and I tried to go to the meetings. There was, you know, I was hearing things like, of course, if you don't get a God, you're not going to stay sober. There was some bizarre thing I went to where they made you do all the steps in one night and sit at a table, and people would come up and yell things at you who didn't even know you. It was, you know, really bizarre crap. And luckily, at one of these dances in Glendale, showed up a childhood friend of mine that, you know, we used to sneak out of our houses in the middle of the night and drink wine and smoke cigarettes. And her name was Milena. And Milena, I told Milena my difficulty with the God stuff. And she invited me to the We Agnostics meetings. And thank God for her. And thank God, you know, thank God, listen to me, right? I'm still, you know, I'm so, I'm still hearing this stuff all the time. But anyways, and so I, you know, thank goodness for We Agnostics, and people were so friendly and so nice. And it was like, I finally felt like I was in a room full of sane people, you know, people that, you know, were independent thinkers, like-minded, all of those things. And it was really, really wonderful. And because my attitude, I think one time I started in ACA, which was Adult Children of Alcoholics, and I remember someone telling me, you know, get down on your knees and pray. And I actually said this and thought this. And I said, if I'm going to get down on my knees and pray to anything, it's going to be to myself, because I'm the only one that is keeping me alive. And, you know, of course I was under tremendous, you know, I was living in trauma at that time. But quickly to get back to AA, I didn't meet Charlie right away. I did know that he was the center of the group and sort of the center of the room. And because I was very much in my head and full of myself. But Elizabeth was one of the first people that I met that came up to me and talked to me. And I remember a lot of you. And Cheryl was, you know, big, you know, I remember you very strongly, Cheryl, you know, being a wonderful example of AA to me, and Bernard and many other people, Sean at the Sunday night meeting, lots of people. And of course, I remember, I think Jerry Buchanan was the first one that had a big effect on me that I remembered most clearly. But of course, Ernie Sanchez and Merle, Charlie, all they were like, you know, really, really wise. And it was just a wonderful group of people. And I was really grateful and felt very privileged to be a part of it. But one thing that Jerry said that caught me right away is he said he felt like the biggest piece of, he felt like he was really, really unique. That's what he was saying. That he was the most unique, special person in the world, which I could identify with. I thought that of myself. And then, but on the other hand, he felt like he was the biggest piece of shit in the world, which I also identified with. So there were things like that. There were gems like that. And yes, there was lots of love and lots of kindness. And there was a period of time where I was calling Charlie and I was having great difficulty finding any kind of assistance because, like I said, I didn't have health insurance and I had had a neurological injury, but as far as other people were concerned, it was invisible. They didn't have really good testing. Of course, I didn't have family or anybody that knew me beforehand that could vouch for me. And it was just like a war zone trying to get assistance, and ended up living in a place that wouldn't allow me to work and harass me to death. And I was calling Charlie and crying on the phone about all of these problems I was having. And Charlie really tried to help me. And I think he spoke to some people he knew. And he finally said, well, you really need a social worker. And he was right. And to this day, I have not been able to get a social worker to assist me or advocate for me, you know, in that sort of thing. There have been little small things. But it has really been a struggle. And it was not a struggle for a long time to stay sober. It was all the isms, you know, all the other things that I felt about myself and difficulties getting along in the world or knowing how to relate to people. But those AA meetings on Friday night were just lifesavers. I looked forward to that meeting so much, and it carried me through every week and every battle and everything that I was, you know, had to deal with both within myself and my body, with, you know, doctors and government agencies and being harassed where I lived, and just on and on and on. It was just a madhouse. But those Friday nights were so great. It was wonderful to show up and see all these wonderful, normal, sane people that had quirks just like me, you know, thought independently, and were so open and kind for the most part. And I was cake lady, I think, for like 4 or 5 years there. And I can relate to what Linda was sharing, because yes, there was a nice big pot, and I would get these really, I don't know where I got these cakes from, but I think I had special order cakes every week. Got these really, I tried to at least most get really, really wonderful cakes. And it was a wonderful commitment to have. And it was wonderful to be a part of something that was a group and a room full of people that, where I felt comfortable, where I didn't feel I learned to feel more comfortable and didn't have all that fear and shame. And mind you that, you know, before that and during this meeting, I mean, I would actually, you know, I would still attend the God-centered meetings because, you know, I wanted to, mostly because they were close to my house, but also because I wanted to voice I wanted to be a voice of another way of thinking. Actually, Elizabeth was my sponsor and told me I had to go to a woman's meeting. And that was the closest one to my house. And she stopped going. That's how bad it was. Anyways, but I would write in the book and I would change everything from, you know, him to her or gender neutral. And, you know, I was just always bucking things. And so that Friday night meeting was great. And the Sunday night meeting was wonderful as well when I, you know, could make it. But of course I like to go out dancing Saturday night, so I was often tired on Sundays. Anyways, it was just a wonderful experience. I don't think I would have ever stayed sober or stayed in AA as long as I have without the We Agnostics groups. And I got out of touch with it when I stopped being able to drive and moved and lost my home and all those things. But then during the pandemic, I got online and reconnected with We Agnostics. So I'm very grateful for that. and grateful to all of you, because certainly without all of you, and Bernard was part of big part of my sobriety as well, did a lot of things together. Milena and Ileana and I used to go out dancing a lot, and just there are a lot of things. I'm not remembering everything. I remember parties at Cheryl's house that were really great, and I always felt so honored to be invited. And anyways, thank you so very much, and I'm very honored to have been asked to participate, and just, you know, so wonderful to hear and see you all again. Thank you.
Okay, let's thank Maria. She's always
thank you, Maria.
Meaningful to me in my life and my sobriety. I'm grateful that I met Milena as well. Some of you may know Milena, and I wish she could have could be with us today. I'd like to take this moment maybe to think about all of those people who mean so much to us in We Agnostics, and send them good vibes, if you would. And Bob, are you available now, or are you still at the dentist? What's going on? I'd hate to speak before you, because I'm just going to sound terrible next to that. Anyway, we've run out of panelists that have shown up. Some were invited. Herb? Oh, Herb, would you like to speak about early We Agnostics and Charlie Politech? I didn't know. I didn't see you on the list. Maria may have asked you if you could, please. And then after Bob speaks, and after I say a few words, who's ever attending may share and talk about whatever moves you. Herb?
I just have a few words. Can you hear me now?
I can.
Oh, great. I'm Herb Mendelson. I'm a sober alcoholic, and Charlie Politech was my sponsor. And I have to tell you, he always told you the bad news, which was fine, because you don't want a sponsor to just be a yes person. A couple brilliant quotes that I can remember was I was always talking about my survival job, my B job, and I'm an actor and writer and director, but always needed to have a survival job, and I called it my B job, and Charlie said, no, that's where if you're making your money at it, it's your A job. You've got to treat everything like it's important. And then there is his great desire to live to be 100, which he just kind of, in logic terms, just barely missed. He was 96.75. He always wanted us to make sure that we gave homage to all the time that he had on the planet. So he always said he was 96.75. Anyway, I was really, really lucky to have Charlie to call. And now I've got Bob G, which I'm also very, very lucky, and call on a regular basis. And this program works if you work it, and giving it away is the only way to make it come back. Thank you for letting me share.
All right, let's thank Herb, for I keep wanting to call him Herb. I'm sorry, Herb, for
thank you, Herb.
And
I've got to get back to work pretty soon, but
I'm grateful that you were able to contribute, and those were meaningful words about why we're here celebrating this celebration of for many of us, and certainly for me, I wouldn't have been able to get in and stay sober were it not for the, for you people present and the people that we're talking about. And really the only sane voice has been Alcoholics Anonymous. Although there wasn't a lot of discussion about God in a lot of meetings in the Los Angeles area, and there were a lot of just crazy iconoclastic individuals. There were those meetings where, you were told what you had to do and how you, what you had to believe. And I think they would have driven me away were it not for Charlie's wise words that somebody else mentioned, that I had to translate what they were saying. And that that was kind of meaningful to me. I think Bob's dentist appointment, are you still going with the, I'll just, if I could just share for a minute then. Cheryl had mentioned that she wanted to read Merle's statement about Alcoholics Anonymous and being a non-believer in any kind of anthropomorphic deity. And if we could give Cheryl the floor.
Yeah, I was going to email it to anybody who was interested, but I could go ahead and read it if you'd like me to, if I could get it to. There we go.
Please, I think it would be meaningful for all of us.
No, I was looking. Merle, my husband died in December 2020, and Merle died, I think, in January or February 2021. So I was talking to his wife, quite a bit, because that's a very tremendous shock when you, and of course, Merle and Nanette had been married for 30 something years when he died. Let me get through here too. So Merle wrote this on May 28, 1998. An Atheist Stays Sober is the name. I did not come to AA willingly. I did not want to join anything. I did not want to go to meetings. I did not want to stop drinking. And I certainly didn't want to hear anything about God. I also did not want to go to jail, but attending AA meetings was a condition of probation on a drunk driving charge, so I went to the required meetings. I'm not one of those people who fought the battle of the bottle. I never fought it. I drank every day that I could for 31 years from the time I was 14 until finally, when the judge sent me to AA at 45, my life was completely in the toilet. Not drinking was so foreign to my consciousness that it wasn't until I was at an AA meeting that I ever considered the possibility. It never occurred to me. My third marriage had ended in divorce 2 years earlier. I hadn't been employed or employable since then, and I owed money to everyone I knew. I did not have a clue that either my drinking or a disease called alcoholism had anything to do with my plight. I thought if I got another job, found another woman, got another car, I totaled mine in the wreck that earned me the citation, those things would fix me and I'd get my drinking back under control. I told myself I had done so twice before when a marriage and a good job seemed to crash about the same time. The first time had taken a few weeks, the second a few months, but this was different. It had been going on for 2 years and nothing was coming back together. I didn't know how to do anything except wake up about midday, go to my regular neighborhood saloon, drink into the wee hours until I passed out or made it home, and then get up and start it all over again. The days came and went without leaving a message, and I had no idea what was wrong. When I first heard the term pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, it sounded like a step up. I didn't want to stay sober until I had been sober a few days, and that happened because I identified with the people who spoke at the meetings. Their experiences were the kind that I had, and it was amazing to me that they were putting their lives back together without alcohol. I couldn't imagine such a thing, but it was increasingly clear that my life would not be coming back together with alcohol. But how could AA work for me? I really believed it could not. Oh, I knew it worked for others, but all I heard at some of those meetings was God, God, God. And I was too intelligent, too educated, too sophisticated, too cosmopolitan for all that God stuff. How could this superstitious nonsense work for me? I've been an atheist all my life, and I just didn't believe I could belong in AA without continuing to be the chameleon I'd been throughout my drinking years, playing the role, wearing the disguise, and waving the false credentials so I could fit in wherever I was, good at speaking their language, but sad inside that nobody spoke mine. My sponsor was an old drinking buddy who had been sober for 7 years. He told me alcoholics like himself wanted to sit around and think until they felt they were able to do the things they needed to do. I know I was like that too. He said they found out in AA that this didn't work, that they had to learn how to act right, and eventually they would clear up their thinking. I so desperately needed the attention and the affection I was getting from him and his wife that I was willing to do anything they said, just so they wouldn't throw me away. I had no place else to go and no one else to be with at that time. So after I put together enough sobriety to be feeling better, weeks, not months, he started getting me into the steps. I was able to see that alcohol had beat me and that I couldn't manage my own life. My own drinking had proved it to me. But a power greater than myself, wasn't that just sugarcoating for the God stuff again? I looked up self in the dictionary and it said ego. Had I come to believe that a power greater than my ego could restore me to sanity? I had come to believe that there was more to me than my ego. Otherwise, who answered when I debated myself in the bathroom mirror? Thus, I took step two. Step three was the killer. No matter how you sliced it, it was talking about God. And no matter how you talked about God, I couldn't believe I could relate to that. My sponsor tried to help. He told me to take pencil and paper and complete this sentence. God, as I understand God is, I wrote, God, as I understand God is a non-existent myth invented by one group of people to enable them to control others. He read it aloud and said, good. Now that you know what your understanding of God is, you can take the third step. I accused him of playing games. That's when he told me AA was not a theological debating society, but a program of experience. We take the action that provides the experience, and then we share our experience. So feeling like a fool and not believing a bit of it, I took his suggestion. I got down on my knees in front of an easy chair after carefully closing the drapes so people miles away who had been lying in wait with binoculars could not see me doing such a thing, and read the third step prayer out of the big book. When it was over, I called my sponsor so we could discuss the experience. I did not have a flash of light or religious conversion, I told him. How do you feel, he asked. Well, maybe I felt a little relief. Maybe it wasn't relief, I don't know. Really unfamiliar feeling? Yeah. A feeling you never felt before? I think so. Then he said, could it have been humility? Well, maybe it was. How do you recognize something you never saw before? That was how I got through the third step by rote. I'm not going to kid you. I don't think I had really done it honestly as me. I still thought there was a wide gap between me and the God stuff that I wasn't completely comfortable with. I took the steps by rote, so if I tried to help a newcomer, I could have it to give away. I read AA literature. In AA Comes of Age, I discovered that half of the original 100 had been atheists or agnostics, and they made Bill modify the language in the steps, adding, as we understood him, after God, so no one would be excluded. But still, I heard God, 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 God. One minute it seemed possible to fit in, and the next I thought I was kidding myself. I didn't know how to do anything sober. I didn't understand that when I stopped drinking, I would meet my disease, that without anesthesia to deaden the reality imposed itself on me, or to deaden the way reality imposed itself on me. I could not function the way I had for 29 of those 31 drinking years, able to hold jobs, able to meet women, able to do things that a human being did. I couldn't do anything without a drink, and I wasn't prepared for that. I didn't know what it would be. I didn't know it would be like that. I felt like a child. I was in a state of almost constant humiliation, not humility, but humiliation. I didn't realize this much was wrong with me, and I didn't know if I was ever going to be all right again without a drink. I had a terrible time sleeping. I would watch all-night movies on TV. Tears would run down my face and I wouldn't even know why I was crying. I was so disassociated from my feelings. I had no idea what they were, where they came from. One night I was watching an old movie from the 50s called Breaking the Sound Barrier about British pilots who were testing supersonic aircraft. They would build up speed by going into a deep power dive to find out what happened at Mach 1. When they tried to pull the plane out of the dive, they tried to pull back on the stick but couldn't move it. They would pass out from the G's and the plane would crash. They lost pilot after pilot until one of them failed to attach his shoulder harness properly. When he went into his dive, couldn't pull the stick back, and passed out from the G's, he slumped forward in the loose harness and knocked the stick forward. The plane came out of its dive and he came out of his blackout. That was how they discovered that the controls reversed at Mach 1. It flashed on me that this was a metaphor for my life. Every time I flew, I crashed. It was a sure thing. And the harder I tried to pull the stick back, the faster I dove to the ground. I had no chance at all. I suddenly saw that it didn't require any God to take over the controls. If I threw myself on the mercy of the random whims, I was going to improve my chances. I just had to let go of that stick. That was how I took the third step. I took a look at my way and let go. A month later, I was given a freelance job, which enabled me to buy an old car. My sponsor immediately suggested I start giving rides to newcomers. After all, I had been picked up and delivered to my first 80 meetings. Now it was time to give something back. He had been taking me to a Wednesday night meeting and helped start in another part of the city, a high crime area which needed AA. I found myself volunteering for a commitment there to come an hour early and set up the tables and chairs. I had to take a bus across town and walk several blocks through a dangerous neighborhood to reach the church where the meeting was held, a journey which frightened me. But I wanted to stay sober so much, I did it every week for 7 months. By then, I was literature chairman at the Monday meeting. No sooner did that commitment end, but I was elected secretary of a Saturday meeting. Before I was free of these commitments, I was 2 years sober. I had taken the steps to the best of my ability and thought I had a good AA program, but I was still struggling to make a living and was still without a woman in my life. I tried another commitment, this time in central service, the local structure which ran our central office. But for all my good AA life, my outside existence seemed bleak. I had a terminal case of where's mine. I screamed at my sponsor that he couldn't understand my employment problems because he was self-employed, nor could he relate to my romantic problems because he had a wife and kids at home. He listened patiently and suggested I call a fellow member who had recently faced a job hunt himself. He was sober 5 years longer than I was. I asked his advice and he nodded his head. What you need, he said, is to get into the 11th step. He suggested I get down on my knees before going to bed and tell God that if in order to stay sober, I would never work another day in the motion picture business, my former career, that I was willing. And that if to stay sober, I would never have another woman in my life, I was willing. I wanted to hit him, but he was too small. I wanted to scream, but I'm an atheist. But I'd already gone through all that with my sponsor about the third step, and I knew I couldn't debate. I had to take the action and discuss the experience before I could complain. So I bit my tongue and asked him how long he thought I should do that. Until you mean it, he said. I cursed to myself, but determined to get this nonsense out of the way so I'd have the right to ask for a better suggestion, I did what he suggested that night and realized once that I didn't mean it. Damn, I thought. Not to do it again. I did it again and again the next couple of nights, but still didn't mean it. That made me try to talk myself into meaning it so I could stop doing it. In the process, I realized I wasn't being asked to commit to unemployment, nor was I being asked to embrace a life of celibacy. What I was being asked to do was to affirm my commitment to sobriety and remind myself that it was my top priority because if I didn't stay sober, there would be no career. There would be no woman. Hadn't I already proved that to myself? So, of course, if that's what it took to stay sober, I was willing to do it, whatever it was. Now I saw this clearly. I meant what I was saying, and that nothing was more important to me than sobriety, that nothing could be. That night, I said it and meant it. The next day, my phone rang. It was a woman I had worked with at a film production company 5 years earlier. She asked what I was doing. Before my brain could think to explain my plans, my hopes, my lies, my pretenses, my mouth, without my permission, was already speaking. To tell you the truth, I'm desperately looking for a job, it said. Oh, thank God, she said, before I could recover my wits. I was afraid you'd be insulted. She explained that her husband worked at a large film lab in Hollywood and had a customer who started a company 13 years ago to produce and distribute educational films. He was doing well, but he was working too hard and now wanted to find someone to run it for him. Was I interested? All the God people love to tell me, see, God was working in your life all along. All that you had to do was ask him for help. They meant well, and I thanked them. I don't debate theology, remember? My own view is that getting on my knees to pray to a God I didn't believe in was so humbling that my ego was not ready to speak as quickly as my mouth. I had been softened by the exercise and caught off guard, told the truth. That's what seemed to work so well when I remembered to do it. Regardless, when I was back in a management job in my chosen field, I was able to make some serious financial amends for which my creditors were deeply grateful. I soon started the job. I invited an Al-Anon friend to a rock concert a fellow AA member was giving in a nightclub to restart her music career. Free tickets were rife at our meetings. I'm already going with two girlfriends, she said. Why don't you come with us? They picked me up, and one of her girlfriends showed me how to make earplugs out of a napkin when the music got painfully loud. She had joined Al-Anon a year after I got sober, but her relationship with a sober alcoholic hadn't lasted. She was not looking for another one. 2 years later, when I was 5, we were married. Within 30 days, we're celebrating my 22nd AA birthday, her 21st Al-Anon birthday, and our 17th wedding anniversary. My wife does not happen to be an atheist, but a mixed marriage works for us as long as our program comes first. That was our first promise to each other, and we both honored it through service commitments and by being active sponsors. After 3 years in central service, I became a GSR, and since then I've spent over 12 years in general service. Today, there is no gap between my atheism and my membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the most democratic organization that I've ever had the privilege and pleasure to be part of. I found in AA a deep devotion by believers, atheists, and agnostics alike to the principles of the 12 steps of recovery, the 12 traditions of unity, and the 12 concepts of service. As we say in the format of my home group, we don't have to adopt anyone's beliefs or have to deny our own in order to stay sober in AA. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. AA has given me more than just a return to usefulness and a sober marriage that's already lasted longer than the first three combined. AA has enabled me at long last to do the one thing I can do better than anyone else on earth, and which used to be the last thing on earth I ever wanted to do, to be myself. That is the true gift of life, and my gratitude is beyond measure. The end. You know, and Merle was one of those people who you could always call any time of day or night, and he would talk to you for hours until you fell asleep. So, and his wife's just an absolute jewel. And, you know, when she was suffering, you know, and Linda too, I knew they were suffering. I mean, I didn't see how I could survive when my husband died. I just wanted to croak. And it's 2.5 years later, and I have a good life. You know, I'm flinging vegetables at poor people. I learned how to can. I go teach little kids about farming, and, you know, I'm trying to come up with different recipes for watermelon, you know, to have at this festival. So, you know, it's one of those things, just keep fucking moving and go to a goddamn meeting. It works.
I'm always humbled by the authenticity and genuine intellect and humanness of everybody I've ever met in We Agnostics. I'm Bernard. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic, and I would not be sober or clean were it not for the people of We Agnostics and the people present. I'm sorry for the time I know in Ireland it's quite late and most of you have fallen asleep or fallen off. And I'm sorry if we were, if I in particular was boring and, you know, I tried to make this event as much as I could an event about celebrating people's life who had changed mine. And as Alcoholics Anonymous did. And I'm really grateful that Bill and Bob, as believers as they may have been, and as narrow-minded as they may have been in the beginning, opened their minds and their hearts to allow anybody of any faith or lack of faith, and to the best of their ability, better themselves and stop drinking. Two of the things that I was trying to do, but left to my own volition, could not. And I'm grateful for everyone who is a part of my life and a part of my, you know, when I heard about Merle talk about his wife and my current wife, I feel exactly the same way. The principles that are in our life, doesn't matter. She's not an atheist. And I don't call myself an atheist, but I certainly have no anthropomorphic deity, and it makes no sense to me. But that doesn't mean that I can't relate to somebody who does. And that they're the way that they're trying to just live their life and be better for themselves one day at a time. And Bob, are you still with it, Dennis? I don't know. I know we were going to go till 4 o'clock. I may have mixed up the order. I don't do anything perfectly, but I think that
now I can probably talk now if you like.
Yes, please. Bob, you can talk, please.
Okay. Hi, guys. Sorry about that. I have the chattiest hygienist in the world. She just kept talking while I was trying to listen. Turn my camera on and see me. Hello. Almost got ran over, but I'm okay. It's been a great around the world where devastation has happened, and they interview people, you'll always hear an Irishman. Always, because they just go there. I don't have much to add about Charlie. He was a wonderful, loving, kind, generous, thoughtful human being. Really was. I will tell you that last week or a week and a half ago, I was in Austin, Texas, and I went to that original meeting that Charlie brought the format from to Los Angeles. And I went there just specifically to say thank you to them. They're still there. They're still meeting. And it was really great to be there. It was on a Tuesday. And I said, I bring you greetings from Los Angeles. And the We Agnostics group that came from here to us. And they, of course, two people said, oh, Charlie Polachek. So, you know, it came full circle. Charlie will always be with us as long as I am alive and those who remember him are alive. And that's a wonderful thing, you know. In Judaism, they say you save one life, you save the world. And so Charlie is responsible for many, many worlds. And my sponsor, cancer was Merle, and Merle got a lot of what he had from Charlie and, of course, from his sponsor. And, you know, his sponsor was one of the first people I ever met that had done the Course in Miracles. And that was pretty cool. He told me he had done it alone in a cabin for 6 months. And I thought that was really wild, you know. Belief or disbelief, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter what you believe. It's what you do, how you treat your fellows, how much love you can share and spread and give, you know. I love Albert Schweitzer said, you know, I don't know you, we've never met, but I can tell you this, until you learn to become of loving service to other human beings, you will never be happy. And it really is the source of happiness, is knowing that you're helpful and you're kind and generous, you know. There, I like to talk about all the other literature that went into us before the big book, you know. And there was a story in the third edition where guy says, Alcoholics Anonymous is an amalgamation of all the good philosophy, all the philosophy that is based on love, and that there is only one sin, and that is to stand in the way of someone's spiritual growth or your own. And I love that because I came from fundamentalist Christians where at 6 years old going to church, the preachers told us we're going to hell and there was nothing we could do about it. We're born into sin and you are going to hell. And I hated them for that. I hated that. I said, I'm only 6 years old. I'm going to hell. You know, it's like, and later when I started drinking, I thought, well, if I'm going to hell, I'm going to have a good time, you know. So I threw out religion with their hypocrisy because I saw so much of it in my childhood in the South, so much hypocrisy. They would talk one way and act another. And that is really against the program I've worked for my lifetime now. I got sober August 13th, 1982, and I found We Agnostics in my first month or so, and it's been my home group ever since. And I went to the Friday night meeting for the first 5 years of my sobriety. I went there every Friday night. I was secretary at one point. And in the third year of my sobriety, I moved to Santa Monica and, oh my God, the traffic became horrible. It's like it was an hour and a half drive to get to the meeting, you know. When we first started, when I first started coming to We Agnostics, I came to a bank up on Hillhurst, I believe. And we didn't have any chairs. We sat on the floor. And then we moved to a bank, you know, they have these community rooms at 3rd and Fairfax across from the farmer's market. We were there for a while and then ultimately wound up at Kaiser. So I've been to those early meetings and they saved my life. They saved my life today, you know. The things that Merle said in that writing he did were things he said to me and shared with me. And, you know, I bonded with people in the group and became close with Joseph O'Connor, and he was sponsored by Merle. And it was all just so beautiful to have a group of friends to go to meetings with, to talk about what we heard in meetings, to laugh at the other people, to to make jokes about everything and to feel like you fit in somewhere. And that's what we agnostics has done for so many people. I like to point out to some of the groups I go to that on page 46 in the big book, and the second half of a sentence where Bill says something like, we talk a lot about God around here, and here's the caveat. He says, after a comma, but none of us actually knows what that is. And, you know, Bill admitted it. Nobody knows what that is. And, you know, I like Joseph Campbell. Joseph Campbell says it's a mystery wrapped in an enigma. My mouth is still dead. And that is beyond all human understanding. And that's all. I mean, okay, if you can't understand it, if no human can understand it, then you got to come up with your own. And that's what Charlie and Merle did for me. I came up with my own. It is mine. It works for me. And, you know, it's personified in some of the books I read as a child. Rip Van Winkle is about a man waking up in the middle of his life. That's my alcoholism. Pinocchio is about a phony, a boy made of wood who finds out that by telling the truth, you start to become real. And that is the first step in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the greatest piece of literature about spiritual awakenings for me, and I still love it today, is the story about Scrooge, you know, where he goes through being visited by his past and his future and looking at who he actually is. And by doing that, he changes. And that's Alcoholics Anonymous to the T. And, you know, I was about 5 years sober sitting in an Alano club at one of those meetings. And I said to this guy across the table, hey, you ever see that movie with Alistair Sim? And I wonder if at 5 years after that morning where he wakes up so happy, does he still have that feeling? And this guy said, it's funny you should ask me that. I just reread that book. And he said, in the book, it says that Scrooge was able to keep the spirit of Christmas present alive in his heart till the end of his days. And my friends, that's what I hope that Alcoholics Anonymous gives to you, because that's what it's given to me. And I'm so grateful for this meeting. For Charlie, for Merle, for all those who have come before us, we stand on the shoulders of giants who teach us how to love and how to act in the world. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bob. I'm grateful that Bob was our last person to speak, because he gave words to my heart. And I thank you all for participating, for joining in. I just briefly want to say that I was taught in We Agnostics that what I believe and how I vote are outside issues in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's a personal journey. And I'm grateful that I was taught by such wise, authentic individuals how to live clean and sober, and what is an inside and an outside issue. You know, sometimes alcohol took a powder form, or I smoked it. That's not an outside issue. What is an outside issue is what I believe. And I never want to what I believe get in the way of how I may help another individual. And that's, to me, the spirit of Alcoholics Anonymous. And If we could all unmute and do the responsibility pledge, we'll end the meeting in a normal fashion. Does anybody have the need to say something? If you came in with a problem, don't leave with a problem. If you developed a problem while you were here, now's the time. We'd like you to share.
Maria Alcoholic.
Hey, Maria.
I thank everybody, but I especially want to thank you so much, Mark, for suggesting this and hosting it. And thank you so much, Bernard, for all your work in putting all of this together. I'm very grateful. It's really wonderful to hear everybody and be reunited. Thank you so much.
Brian, would you like to share?
The first one we shared, Elizabeth and Linda, I really appreciated what you said and kind of doing what I find atypical at these meetings, which is to not bash God and religion and traditional AA. And I'm a wishy-washy fence riding agnostic, and who, when I came to AA as a more believing Catholic, found this Oxford group hypertheism totally irreconcilable with the Catholic Catechism and probably, per the Church, blasphemous. And what I do find curious is people who seem to want to drink so badly, which I understand because I used to, but blame their not quitting on a being they proclaim does not exist. That to me is chicken stuff, but thanks for letting me. And I came in fine. But, you know, then I heard the typical stuff that I hear. Oddly, which doesn't seem like something maybe Charlie Polichuk
Oh, you got muted, Brian. Can you unmute? You were in the middle of.
No, my final point was it is hard for me to imagine Charlie Polichuk carrying on with this kind of, you know, grand disdain for God, for traditional AA, for religion. So, and I think it's interesting to me, I'm enough of a Catholic. You know, I haven't renounced it. I haven't declared myself fallen away. There's no need to. The appeal to these secular meetings to me is that I can't reconcile this. Bill Wilson's and Frank Buckman's peculiar concoction. It's not even an interpretation of the Abrahamic God of Judaism, of Christianity, of Islam. Into what was, you know, for Mr. Buckman, a grift, a religio grift. What does get upsetting after a while is I hear in these preambles, we neither endorse nor oppose, but I have to hear Catholicism slammed by people who are ignorant about its precepts. So, but again, I thank Linda and Elizabeth, who appeared before, for their restraint and their maturity. Thank you.
Okay, in that spirit, if we could all do the responsibility pledge, and thank you all. I love you all, dear. Thank you all for participating in my sobriety in my life.
Thank you, Bernard.
Bernard.
On the count of three, who's responsible? One, two.
When
anywhere reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA always to be there.
From now on,
And for that, I am responsible.
I am responsible.
Keep coming back. It works if you try it.
Fabulous presentation, guys. Thank you.
Hey, everyone.
Take care, everybody.
Enlightening.
Carol, I want to come see the farm.
And then you can keep going down the 99 and you can visit me. And
I mean, I that would be a ways, but yeah.